And if it doesn't, we'll swap around. Good morning. Good to see you all this morning. So just first off, we're all very aware of the Israel-Gaza situation. I've got a close friend who's a doctor in emergency medicine, and he's directly involved in all that kind of stuff. But sometimes, you know, it's good to speak and preach into current affairs. I'm not going to be doing that this morning. Just in what we've got in Habakkuk 2, I don't think it particularly helps us. But I don't want you to feel that I'm not concerned, that I'm ignoring what's going on in the world. We're all very aware of that. So I think actually Habakkuk does speak into that. But I'm not specifically addressing that this morning. So just to be clear about that, I hope that's okay. So look, we're carrying on looking at Habakkuk. The book is set in about 600 BC in the kingdom of Judah, so the southern part of what we know now as Israel. And it's set in the reign, probably in the reign of a king called Jehoiakim. Jehoiakim sounded a terrible kind of guy. You can read about him in Kings and in Chronicles. And we read that Jehoiakim did evil in the sight of the Lord, and that he did detestable things. So that was Jehoiakim, the king, but also the country was in a state. So we, am I in trouble with that, Daryl? Am I? All right. The country was in a state. And in the first chapter of Habakkuk, we read, didn't we, that there was violence, there was corruption, there was injustice in the whole country. And Habakkuk is speaking into the midst of all this going on. So he's speaking in a context of evil and of suffering. And then God tells him it's going to get worse. And we know, looking back on history, that Jerusalem was destroyed by the Babylonians less than 20 years after these things that we're looking at happening. So that's the context, just for these little four verses that we've got this morning. A huge amount in those little verses. I'm going to mostly think about watching and waiting, and then a little bit about living by faith. So if you like, how to watch and how to live. If you like classic rock, which I happen to do, if you don't, I'm sorry. If you like classic rock, there are a couple of songs that could act as a soundtrack for this, and you can work out what those might be as we go along. But we're not going to play them, so don't worry. I'm not going to inflict that on you. Do you know Oscar Wilde's play, The Importance of Being Earnest? I love it. It's incredibly funny. If you don't know it, find a film version. It's just great fun. All kinds of nonsense goes on. Towards the end of the play, the hero and heroine have finally sorted each other out. They've fallen in love. It's all great. He's called Jack, and he has to leave the room to go and find some family records or something. And he says, Gwendolyn, will you wait for me? And she says, I'll wait for you all my life, if you're not too long. And we're like that, aren't we? We can't wait. We're hopeless. My mother said she used to pray for patience, and all she had was opportunities to exercise it. We don't like waiting. So I'm going to give you two examples of waiting. Okay. So the first is this. Imagine you're in the post office in Bradford Road, okay? And there's about six people ahead of you in the queue, and you're standing there, and you've already looked around at everything there is to look at, and there's not a great deal there. What happens? Your hand instantly goes to your pocket or your bag to get your phone out, doesn't it? We can't wait for 10 minutes in a queue without some kind of distraction. So that's the first thing to think about. However, this evening, what's happening at 8 o'clock this evening? It's not rugby, no, sorry, that's all sad. Planet Earth, come on, Planet Earth 3, 8 o'clock, BBC 2. I'm so excited about Planet Earth, I love all that. If you remember the Frozen Planet series, do you remember when they filmed the snow leopard? That camera crew took a month to get their film of a snow leopard. they had to do all kinds of difficult stuff. They had to climb mountains. They got altitude sickness. They had to be alert the whole time to try and catch a glimpse of this thing. One of the crew said, this is a bit of a tongue twister, but we were trying to film a rock-coloured cat in a mountain range of cat-coloured rocks. And they had to be always on it. And eventually they got their shot. So do you see those two different sorts of waiting? And Habakkuk is the second. He's alert, he's engaged, he's pressing on, he's busy all the time. That's what Habakkuk was up to. Now, Habakkuk knows the country is in a terrible state. And so he says, I will stand at my watch and I will station myself on the ramparts. I will look to see what the Lord will say. So this is cue for our first song. Any ideas yet what we might be going for first of all? Thank you. Who was that? Sue Monk. So, sorry about this. So Bob Dylan wrote the song All Along the Watchtower. You might know Jimi Hendrix's version. Lyrics are pretty strange, actually. But there's this sense of drama, of being on the watchtower, looking out. So that's your first little track. Imagine your favourite castle, or imagine Farley Castle, and imagine a guard put up on the highest tower, and that sentry is there to look out over the valley below to see what is going on. And that's the picture that Habakkuk is painting. Now, I guess he probably didn't climb up on top of the tower. Perhaps he did, who knows. But that's what he was doing himself. He said, I'm going to go up there. I'm going to watch and I'm going to wait. So it's like the camera crew. We're going to be alert and engaged and busy and watchful. And Habakkuk wasn't looking for snow leopards. He was looking and waiting to see what the Lord would say to him. We're not told how long he waited. I don't think it matters particularly. The point is that he watched and he waited. What matters is the way that he went about what he was doing. Now, I get distracted very easily. I'd be completely hopeless as a sentry. My mind wanders off. I think about all kinds of things I shouldn't be thinking about. But there's dear Habakkuk. He's pressing on. And do you remember last week, if you heard Tim Lewis's sermon, he talked about this phrase, wrestling with God, unconditional wrestling with God. And that's what Habakkuk was doing. There were two sisters, Christine and Peggy Smith. They lived on the island of Lewis in the Hebrides. And they were in their 80s. They were housebound. They were quite infirm. But they'd heard that in their little church, there weren't any young people going to church, and that troubled them. So they determined they would pray twice a week, on a Tuesday and a Friday. So in their little cottage, 10 o'clock at night, they would get down on their knees and pray. And they prayed till 3 or 4 in the morning, week after week. And that was the beginning of the 1949 revival in the Hebrides, when extraordinary things happened. The Holy Spirit was really poured out on people. All kinds of things happened. Read about it. It's amazing. And it started with these two little infirm housebound ladies doing what Habakkuk did. Do you see what I mean? They stood on their watch. They stood on the ramparts and were patient and they endured. So just to have a quick break, it might be helpful to think, what would that look like for us? What's that for us? And perhaps you're already doing that. Perhaps you're up on your watchtower, you're fully engaged, but it seems to be going on for a long time. So I think, take heart. We don't know how long Habakkuk wrestled for, but this may take some time. So if you're doing that already, be encouraged by Habakkuk. Don't give up. Press on. Continue to wrestle. Don't get distracted. But perhaps God is calling you to something like that. He's put something on your heart, but you've not quite kind of got on with it, if you like. So get up the ramparts. Get on with it. Whatever it is he's put
on your heart. But often we're not quite sure, are we? We think, well, I don't really have anything pressing on my mind. What should I do? Think about what are the things that trouble you? What are the things that concern you as you look at the world, as perhaps people that you know? And think about those things and be prepared to station yourself on the ramparts for that. So that's a bit about watching and waiting. I'm going to look very briefly at verse 4 and living by faith. There's a guy called Wainwright, Alfred Wainwright, and he wrote lots of guidebooks to the Lake District. Chris is nodding his head. Beautiful little guidebooks. And he said there are only two kinds of walkers, good walkers and bad walkers. Good walkers look at the path, they look carefully, they don't kick up stones and destroy the path. Bad walkers look at everything else and they kick stones and they spoil the path. Only two kinds. And we like to kind of divide people up into the good and the bad, don't we? We're a bit reductionist. And again, Tim Lewis was talking about that last week, wasn't he? About how we all have the good and the bad within us. We're both, aren't we? And he quoted Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who said, "The line dividing good and evil cuts through the heart of every human being." This is the cue for our second song. Any ideas? The line that's drawn between good and bad. Matt's struggling. Deep Purple, Child in Time. Sweet Child in Time, you'll see the line. The line that's drawn between good and bad. There you go. Habakkuk draws his line. And he talks about the puffed up people who are not upright, who are arrogant. And he's perhaps thinking of the Babylonians who are threatening. But I'm sure he's also thinking of his own country, his own people. It's not so straightforward who are the good and the bad, because his own people are, as we heard, living in terrible ways. They're not being faithful. They're not following their covenant with God. And then he talks about the righteous who will live by faith. And they are keeping their agreement with God. They're keeping their covenant with the Lord. And that little phrase, "the righteous will live by faith," became central to the New Testament understanding of what it is to be made right with God. How can God make me part of his family despite all my faults, my sin, my errors, my failings? And it's through faith. My faith in Jesus Christ is what makes me a part of his family. And I think Habakkuk would have been amazed, wouldn't he, at the little words he spoke centuries before, then being so important to us today. And when we think about those words, actually only one person was ever really righteous, wasn't he? Only one person actually utterly lived by faith. And that was Jesus. And we know that Jesus stood at his watch in Gethsemane. When he grappled, he wrestled with his Father to find out what his Father would say. When he prayed, "Father, let this cup pass from me, but not my will, but yours be done." And then Jesus stationed himself on the ramparts of Golgotha, the place of the skull, as he hung on the cross. So we could say that Jesus is the perfect Habakkuk. Habakkuk is kind of a forerunner, if you like. When Jesus stood his watch, he stationed himself on the ramparts for us. We love evidence, don't we? Something new comes on the market, a new drug, we want to know the cost-benefit analysis. We want to know what the harms are, what the benefits are, etc., etc. We want to see the data. And we're the same in our choices in life. We want to know something works. We want to taste it. We want to feel it. We want to check it. We love things that we can get a hold of and be sure of, don't we? But actually, faith isn't like that, is it? Faith is, we read, faith is being certain of what's unseen. And that's what Jesus is asking us to do, is to put our faith in him. Not all the things, the stuff in the world, not to be distracted by that, but faith in him. And, you know, Habakkuk says the righteous will live by faith. And Jesus says, yeah, have faith in me and I will give you life in all its fullness. So there may be all kinds of things, hopefully God is speaking to you through these four little verses, but just a few bullet points for you to think about that might be helpful. So firstly, are you actually on your watchtower, if you can imagine the analogy? Are you on the ramparts already, grappling with something? So keep going. Take courage from Habakkuk. Just press on. Stay active. Stay alert. But perhaps you're a bit reluctant to climb the stairs up to the tower. Perhaps you're aware of a great need, or perhaps you face uncertainties and trials in your own life. Perhaps you're aware that you do things a lot in your own strength. And that's been the case for me. And I realise I need to get up the watchtower a bit more. So perhaps that's you. Or perhaps you feel that you're missing out on true life. Life in all its fullness. That all the stuff isn't really fulfilling. Come to Jesus in faith. The one who promises life in all its fullness. So if any of those sound like you, or there's something else God is speaking to you, you know, there's people at the front here later on, would love to pray with you. You know, I love Habakkuk. I love his honesty, and that this book really resonates with me today. Whether or not you like Jimi Hendrix and Deep Purple, I hope that there's been something here that's resonated with you. And I hope we can all learn from Habakkuk to stand at our watch, to station ourselves on the ramparts, and to put